You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Guten Abend.
And it's me, Brian. And this is episode 29, Get to the Roman Colosseum. So, in this episode, I just realised there's a new baby upstairs, so I probably should not raise my voice quite so loud. Also, I'm on a tablet, so I may get increasingly weird as this episode goes along. Yeah. The powers of amitriptyline. The gang, and trying to stay up when it's trying to make you go to sleep. The gang fail to figure out whose face and fingerprints they have, despite going through every single record they can get their hands on.
But then, I wouldn't have thought that turtle had Wi-Fi, but what do you know? A pretty good connection.
Because they get hacked by a mysterious man who, for now, we'll call a non-Pierre Polnareff. Until we learn his real name.
That could be any high-top French name.
Yeah, it's kind of, the mystery's gone in the anime version, because you can recognize the voice. As opposed to it just being print on a page. So apparently the boss's name is it Diavolo?
Diavolo.
And
that's kind of pizza.
This mysterious French man says if the gang sends one person to meet him at the Colosseum, he will tell them how to use a head of the arrow to defeat him, or give at least have a chance of defeating him. And then we also get the origin story of the arrows and how they work. How they work is alien viruses.
I thought it was psychic powers.
The alien viruses, people who already, powers. If you've got the ability to, because obviously we know,
It's like your will. If you get hit with stand powers and you can't stand it, you die. So your own stand eats you, basically.
Yeah. And some people just get it without coming into contact with the alien viruses, like Giorno, like this mysterious French man we would have to assume.
Yeah.
Like any JoJo previously that had a stand.
Yeah.
Which really kind of galled me. It's like, oh, this is made by an alien virus. And they're showing silhouettes of like Jotaro and Kakyoin. It's like, well, these guys all did their own thing.
Well, that's when this mysterious French man is saying he's glad that he's met somebody with the spirit of his friends from previous. It's basically your stand. If you've got a stand, the potential to have a stand within you, it will activate as like an antibody against this alien virus, which is on the metal they've extracted from this alien meteor way back in the day.
The lads were initially like a bit incredulous about this dude hacking their computer, but he gives them the boss's name and they're like, that's not enough. That could just be just a random name. And it's like, he has the ability to stop time. How about that, motherfucker? Or edit time, actually. He says it correctly. Yeah.
Meanwhile, because the gang are disturbingly not as bothered as he thought they were going to be after the death of their friends, Diavolo rings Doppio
on an ice cream,
and tells him to follow them, and then also to contact the two worst people in the organization to stop them.
But then, he keeps going over as like, I really hate these fuckers.
But then also stop those two because they are the worst.
Listen, they'll get the job done, but if they find out the thing the other guys are after, I'm actually fucked.
Don't let them go too far. Don't let them off the lead too much.
Yeah, I need you to finish the job, but you know, let them do their thing. Just don't let them find out what fucking Giorno and the guys are after.
What are these two guys' names?
Cicoletta and Secco.
Which one's the doctor? Which one's the patient?
Cicoletta is a doctor.
I thought it was Cicoletta. Okay, must be pronouncing them wrong. Chocolata is the doctor.
Yeah, and Seko is the guy in
the gimp.
Tight-fitting suit.
The gimp. He's the gimp.
Yes.
And apparently, Araki read about a fungus which infects insects, and so that's a stand power now.
Yeah.
I see that in a lot of things. I mean,
it's a fairly well-known one now. I think that has been like it's been featured in like Resident Evil games. I think that was in the Last of Us. The zombies are made from that similar.
It was in Pokemon, like, so, yeah.
It was, yeah.
It's been around.
It's cool, but the thinness between inspiration and the art is getting thinner and thinner as these JoJo's Bizarre Adventures go along.
I think, what's it called? Green Tea. Green Tea works differently than the thing works, because it takes over, it's fungus that takes over an insect's brain, causes it to climb up like the highest piece of grass or tree or whatever it can, and then, you know, spread its spores as high as possible to spread them as far as possible. But in this one, it works the opposite way. A lower down is a higher concentration or something, isn't it?
I guess so.
It is, yes. You have to keep on moving upwards to prevent the thing growing.
Because the thing naturally flow, the spores or whatever flow down.
Yes.
So they gather at sea level, in this case, the most. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, this is, I don't know, our third or fourth flesh-eating virus stand.
Like, literally after we're talking about stand powers are also viruses. Also, here's another stand that is a virus, just to make it more
it's
confusing.
It's a mold. It's deeping.
Sorry. Flesh-eating mold.
It's infectious. I feel like it's got a similar fucking thing going on.
I really regret letting Purple Haze go now. I want to bring it back in somehow.
And so you have to save, well, mainly have to save Durantia, because he's the one who's getting in the worst trouble.
It's just like he's just running around freaking out. Ah, shit, they're all dying. Ah, should I put you into this boat? Ah, shit, it's making it worse. Ah.
Yeah, it's not due to Narancia's own stupidity for once. He was like, let's fucking leg it. And I'm like, that's probably a good idea. In any other situation, that would be a good idea. But in this one, it wasn't. I did like their, like, kind of staying by the docks and observing drunks.
Yes.
Staking out the place. It's like, should we go up there? It's like, ah, let's wait for these drunks to fuck off. Sure. And I was like, is it the two drunks who are trying to piss into post boxes and water fountains, or is it the two drunks asleep on the bench? And I was like, it's one of these guys the stand uses. Like, none of them are. They're all innocent victims.
Yeah, I quite like the shot there where there's a guy clutching onto the lamppost. It's like, I don't want to go. And saying, come on, we gotta get out of here. And then, like, she pulls him up the stairs, but he leaves one arm and one leg behind him on the lamppost, but it's concealed by the staircase. So it's like, what? There's an odd shot, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, is there an extra guy behind there? Is it we're pretending this is a staircase kind of scenario? It's kind of fun.
It's like that trick where you pretend to pull your thumb off, but it's, oh, yes. It's much, much worse.
No pretending here. No pretending necessary.
Mm. Yeah, and Chicoletta and Psycho are filming all this carnage because Chicoletta, that's kind of a sadistic guy. He liked to, in his medical student days, film the looks of despair as he kind of, the patients under his care, he would like tell them awful things. He would also like put guys under, but not all the way, and do surgery on them so they would wake up halfway through. They could see him dissecting them and fill them.
He was a sicko before he got crazy stand powers, yeah.
Yeah, but just layer upon layer. Like, all the worst serial killers, all the worst like film serial killers, all rolled into one guy.
Mm.
Yeah, and apparently Seko is one of his former patients.
But they got on, according to the announcer. That's why I'm calling him a gimp. I mean, like, I'm just going for it.
And so we leave the episode with them heading up the steps as we lead into the next episode, which will be called Green Day and Oasis Part 1.
Oh, I get it now. I was wondering, like, Sanctuary. I was like, what, the Sanctuary again?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It's okay. The real M doesn't really explain how the power works any either, so don't worry about it.
I liked the situation of, you know, your man jumped into the boat, and it's like, Mister can't reach down into the boat to pull him out because he's dissolving inside the boat. It's like, how do I do this? Oh, wait, I could just explode the entire boat and explode our way out of this situation.
Oh, yes.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it involved the Sex Pistols, who are perhaps the best characters in the show.
They're the most fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think Coco Jumbo's man of the match. He's been carrying those guys around in his shell.
That's true, yeah.
Is perhaps the most effective stand there's ever been, is Mr. President. fun episode. I like we got a bit more Doppio. I like the fact that these two guys are like, Even our main villain thinks these two guys are scum.
Mm.
Yeah. This, when this broke last week, is proved divisive with the revelation of how the stone arrows work and what, and all that stuff. It's like, it's like having the Star Wars Episode One moment, blah, 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 but he does sort of forget about this not long afterwards.
It doesn't matter, because there's enough stand users out there for it to just spread naturally at this stage.
And it was also, there's also the phenomenon of, like, some people just have stands because, you know, they just do. They have the knack for it.
It's so evolution or something. Yeah, sure.
There's kind of a version of it, I think, in between parts 7 and 8.
Steel Ball? Or?
Well, it's events in between times. I mean, events which are revealed in part 8.
Oh, right.
There is a condition in part 8, which may be the version of the alien virus.
Okay.
Brought up.
Wait a minute. Does that mean Jesus has something to do with aliens?
I mean, if you think this is sensible, this is straight out of Quatermass of the Pit. What the condition is in part 8 is, I don't think it bears any sort of resemblance to any sort of known medical condition.
I'm fine with them constantly changing how the nature of stands works, because that's how stands work. That's, like, literally inbuilt into how they work. Yeah. I've got a knight who's really fast. It's like, what can you do? Stop time. Yeah. Fucking bullshit. I want a do-over.
This is just the arrows are just the stimulus. They're not the actual cause. So yeah. I think this explanation's perfectly fine.
You either got it or you don't.
Yes.
You must have, like, an impeccable, finely honed sense of, well, I don't know if finely honed, an interesting sense of fashion before you're allowed to have a stand. if you can train your brain to think along those lines, if you can have, like, enough guts to wear, like, a green suit, no shirt, with holes cut out of it, then you might be able to have a stand in the future.
Okay, I thought it would be like a prerequisite, so that if you wanted to find a stand user, you just kind of have a look around. It's like, well, what about Bjork? And it'd be like, yeah, obviously she could have stand powers. That just makes sense. Look at her. It's grand. That kind of way, you know? You need to be eccentric looking to have superpowers.
Yeah. Like David Lynch, she'd be a stand user, definitely.
Yeah. Just in his head.
Well, I don't know. He's transcendental meditation. He'd be a, he'd be using the ripple, not stands.
Oh, cool. Well, you can have both if you want it.
Yeah, you can do both.
Righty-ho, that's JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for this week. Now it's time for the podcast within a podcast. Let's go! And let's go, first of all, to Dororo, episode 17. That's not the episode title.
Really?
Was it the story of questions and answers?
That's it, yes. Something like that.
I must have got the wrong thing. Huh, my bad.
I've still not watched last week's episode because I'm sticking to my thing of, if it's a good enough show, it'll catch me up on what happened. And as it was, you didn't need to know at all what happened last week, because this entirely was with Hyakkimaru and a little bit of his family. Turned out his mother, crap at committing suicide. Didn't do enough of a good job.
But she seems to have kind of maybe thought over actions. Maybe I shouldn't have thrown out my long lost son just immediately like that.
Yes. I appreciated her still being alive, because then you can get some of the scenes from the comic still.
Well, I could get closure for the poor guy, because he meets up with Jukai again, and he almost gets rejected again, because Jukai is seen what he's become. Like, no, he's kind of proud. He's like, oh, he's got some of his bits back. He's speaking and hearing things. He's smiling too. He's like, wow, he's come a long way. But this sentiment around it. He wants like a new leg. Boy, if I give you a new leg, you go out and kill demons, but you can go out and kill people as well. And that isn't what I want for you. So I'm not going to help you. And yeah, Kimura, in that moment, he kind of feels like, I'm getting rejected again. Like, my biological family, they've thrown me out. My kind of surrogate family, my surrogate, like, parent, Jukai here, is also, like, maybe going to turn me away. And he's kind of a bit aghast at that.
I didn't really get that from that him.
I kind of felt that because when Juke is saying, "Oh, I'm not giving you another leg if that's you're going to go out and do it," and then he's flashing back to when, like, to when fucking daughter lads save one, like, completely like cast him out and rejected him. And I think is he definitely like feeling the same kind of fear again that this other like parental figure in his life is going to do the same to him now.
Yeah, I guess. It's just because he's very direct in what he wants, because of his limited vocabulary, I think. Jukai will explain why he's not going to build him a new leg, and then he'll just point again at the leg and demand it that he gets a new one of those.
Kind of like a child, I suppose. But yes. I guess he is starting up with language, yeah.
I don't know, but... He may not a bit for Kelly, but I think he gets it. I think he.
Oh no, sorry. What I'm saying, I'm not saying like a childlike mentality. I mean a childlike way of talking, because he only speaks in short sentences for the most part.
Yeah,
yes, because that comes down to the end when he calls him Mama, because that I like the fact it was that specific, because obviously he's got that from hanging out with Dororo.
Hmm.
And how Dororo always talking about his mother. And so he's obviously thought, oh, this being occupies the same role in my life as...
That's the word for paternal figure, yeah.
Well, no, just sort of nurturing figure, someone who looked after him when he was younger. The mum figures out about the statue. She realizes the reason the head disappeared when he was born is because the goddess was sacrificing her own head to save Hayakuberu's head. So that there was at least something of him left.
Yeah. That's probably going to be the worst demon that's hanging out in the back of that arrangement of statues.
Yeah, when Daigo sends the guy to keep observation on the Hall of Hell, that guy really does not seem like he appreciates the job. He seems absolutely, like, petrified enough, but not showing it to Daigo.
Well, it's like, I'm a fucking well-trained shinobi. He's got me phoned in doing this duty all the time. I'm like, can I look through some spying, some assassinating? No, I'm just doing this spooky shit every week.
And meanwhile, is Tadamaru the brother?
Tahomaru.
Him and his two buddies go and search for another ghoul, which is a... the question is it one of the people who was living in the house who's become...
I don't know, man. When Splinter has fallen on hard times. Yeah.
I know there's an
art girls have moved out
in the comic with a rat man in it. But I think it plays out differently to how this does. And he's like, I'm putting away my emotions, because the archery one, he kind of flinches when he sees that the rat creature's got children.
It feels a little different than just killing a random rampaging ghoul. This is just something trying to do it for the kids, man.
Yeah, but then Tamar was like, wait. And in that moment, herself thinks, oh, he's throwing his hand. Let's burn the whole house down, just to be sure.
Well, yes. Yeah. So they leave the parent alive so that the children won't flee. And then meanwhile, Hayakimaru and his mum have been buried in the cave he lives in by a landslide. And they get out, and then the ghouls he'd fought on the battlefield when he first showed up, there's more of them because they're dropping like fruit out of this tree. And he has to go and fight them. And then that's where we get the explanation of, like, because he won't give him his name. I guess that's because he doesn't want Hayakimaru to learn what he's done in the past and be disappointed with him. Because that's the reason why he doesn't want to make the leg, is because he's pretty certain that in having to kill these demons that he's had to kill humans, and that he's probably going to have to kill his family, and he's got the weight of the domain on him,
And the guy was already like going around as penance, like giving body parts to dead soldiers, not even like injured soldiers. So he doesn't want more of that on his conscience. He doesn't want to be more involved with the death of people.
Yes, Yakimaru as well. So you want to get the body parts back, but why do you want to get the body parts back? Is it because you want to be bold? Is it because you want revenge? Is it because of what? Like, what is your reason? What's your motivation for this? And Yakimaru says, I want to take back what is mine. Even though there was the obvious, taking back from his body parts and what was, and taking from physically, but also what was taken from him, maybe in a more figurative sense, like a loving family life, because to have a stable sort of normal childhood, that's kind of taken from him as well. Maybe he wants to get
a life, his humanity as well, because he's just learning that, that's a person. Oh, that person fills this role. Oh, yes. I can fucking talk to that person.
Yes, because it's the way he describes Dororo to him, of like, there's this thing about this eye that accompanies me.
I like it, I guess. It's cool.
And that's what gives Jukai the glint of hope for his adopted son, is that, if you can get back together with this person, maybe they can keep you from going down to the same dark path I went down.
Yeah. Oh, so you're probably going to grow that leg back anyway, so you don't need me.
I guess it's also partly his guilt as well. It's not just on Hyakumaru, it's that he made those blades in the first place.
He gave him the means to defend himself, but he's using it as a means to destroy rather than to defend. Yeah.
This isn't what I wanted for you, so I'm not going to enable you to do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets bitten by a dying one of the monsters as Hyakumaru is heading off. Meanwhile, everyone is heading towards where Dororo was left off because the brothers heard word and he's been sent by his father to go and kill Hyakumaru. Next week's episode is
the one I titled it as accidentally.
The Story of the Cape of Imp something.
No Mercy.
That's it. Right, then we've got next on the list is One Punch Man Season 2, Episode 5, Martial Arts Tournament, in which not much of the martial arts tournament happens in the episode.
No, not really.
What does happen? There's more monster attacks?
It's Garo versus Metal Bat until Metal Bat's little sister shows up and tells them both off.
I did like that. Again, it's the kind of thing of showing that Garo is not 100% a monster because the little sister's excuse is... I think he figures out Metal Bat is like, wait, I've broken several of his bones and he's lost most of his blood, but he's just getting stronger? Yes. If he fucking connects with me, I'm fucked. And then the little sister just comes in and accidentally saves him because she says, you can't fight anymore because my big bro said he won't expose me to violence. So the fight's over. Fight's over. Yes. That's just how it is. And Garo's like... I guess I have shit to do.
Garo goes off, and then the little sister hits Metal Bat for getting into a fight, and that knocks him out.
Whether it's like the build-up of damage, or she's the only one who can actually injure him, I'm not sure. But it's a pretty fun, funny
then,
moment.
Then a couple of monsters. There's like a slime monster. And
like a big
man.
Bird monster.
Yes, because I was like, why is his mouth moving? And then later on, just a human hand comes out of the chest and passes
with
him
the
business
card. Yeah. I was just thinking, that's just a big bird costume. I know what that is.
That's Phoenix Man. Different. It's got a cool name, but a goofy design.
Yeah.
And he tears up the business card because he doesn't want to become a monster.
Well, he doesn't want to become like an organization of monsters. That's exactly the same thing as heroes, right? Yeah.
I'm looking for the man.
I'm my own monster.
And then there's like loads of hero and monster fights. And like, there's a vampire comments that, hey, both sides have made the mistake in thinking the heroes think they're tougher than monsters. But the monsters also thought the heroes were tougher than monsters. Turns out they're a bunch of wimps. We can beat them up easily.
Yeah, I think he's saying like there's way more monsters than heroes. There's way more villains than heroes, that kind of logic.
It's kind of the idea they've got themselves organized and now they can take care of business.
Formed a union.
And the two electrical guys who were only threat level tiger or something like that, they're like, oh shit, we can fight this guy because we have electric powers. Oh, this was a well-organized event. They're surprised. Yeah.
Marshall Gorilla beats up Heavy Kong. There's another one.
That's Mr. Mal looking dude.
Yeah.
And then eventually, halfway through the episode, we get to the martial arts tournament, where we've got some faces we recognise. Lightning Max and Sneck are in there.
Still annoyed that they're constantly billing him as the bottom fucking guy in this league. It's like, come on, guys. How cool.
There's a guy whose design is basically a less racist ramen man. I like all the ridiculous martial arts names we get.
I like the going through them and their backstories and their motivation. And it's like, yeah, but the one guy who's going to win everything is here. So it's, none of this matters. So that joke worked pretty good.
We get all the exotic ones.
It felt like that to me.
And then we get Dave.
There was a Dave and there was a guy. Rosie
from the psychoanalytic martial art.
Yeah.
Mentai from Spice Fist. Jakku Men from Giga Pro Wrestling. And so he's got to fight. Who's he got to fight? It's, Cherenko has been, like, reverse seeded.
Yeah, they explain reverse seeding to him where it's like they make the weak guys fight together first. And so when he's going up against a guy who's been threatening him the entire time, oh, that means you're weak too, because they think I'm weak.
Yes. Zakos from Fist of Crazy Collision, Fierce Truth. And he plans when he wins to propose to his girlfriend, which then when he gets beaten with one slap, everyone's going, oh, what a terrible thing. He's even worse for him because he was going to propose when he won.
Like, it's initially like, is Cherenko powerful? No, he's just super fucking weak. And it's like, and he's going to, but his girlfriend's going to be really fucking disappointed. And everyone, the audience is laughing. He's like, oh, don't worry, his girlfriend didn't show up. And Saitama's like, phew.
Oh, God, poor guy.
I felt bad there for a second. Now I feel worse for him somehow.
It was a slap. That's all it took.
Well, if he punched him, he might die. So, yeah.
We should also mention Bakuzan from Art of Darkness Hellkill, because he gets his own proper introduction along with Sui Ryu, as former champions. And also, they've somehow never fought each other because Sui Ryu had been, like, goofing off and not taking part. And he wanted to fight a guy who had, like, a wolf's mask who won the previous year but hasn't shown up this year. Whether that will be important in the future or whether that's just a little detail they've added of no consequence, I don't know. By the time Cherenko's, quote-unquote, Cherenko's won his first round, is that Sui Ryu is basically like, okay, there's the guy I'm going to be fighting in the final. Because everyone else just thinks the guy is super weak. But Sui Ryu is like a good enough martial artist that he could tell that.
He could tell the other guy wasn't a pushover, and he walked over him.
Also, meanwhile, we go back in between this. There's more monsters to fight. Super S with her
whip, the S&M
which
one.
Controls heroes when she whips them, but then the Blizzard crew show up. And of course, we get the long lingering and non-animated shot of is it Fubuki? What's the name? Body.
Scroll up kind of thing.
Also, Genos is in the audience for the martial arts tournament.
He's cheering on his boy. That was pretty fun. This is like he's just the only person clapping for him.
Yeah, I mean, the storytelling is fine because it's the same writer as the first season, so
the pacing's off, and I think that comes across more in direction and shit.
Yeah,
because I felt like a lot of this was like part of this was rushed, and it's like I'm not really feeling the full comedy effect that I should be getting here.
You were hopping around, well, whenever you, yeah, were getting chapters, like, week to week, people went and once can't wait to see the next round of that fighting tournament. Oh, it's never a monster that's turned up in my random hero battle. It's like, oh, I'll get back to seeing the Saitama fake his way to the tournament.
Yeah, the storytelling is kind of, the storytelling problems are inherent from the comic. They're not something they've really introduced here. Whether it was pacier in the original one version, because I think he just added lots and lots of, he extended lots of sequences, through this.
Right.
Because there's lots of, like, chapters which have, like, chapter 64, chapter 64.1, chapter 64.2, where, you know, he's really drawn out to the action, but,
Like, as a joke, or?
No, it's like an, he just gets carried away.
Addendum. It's like, I finished that chapter last week, but I kind of want to add on this little extra bit in here, just a bit of flavor, and it's just like a little coda to the previous chapter, and then you don't necessarily need to have read it to get what's going on in the next properly numbered non-disciplined point chapter, but it just adds a little something else in there.
And he's gone back before and added extra pages to chapters, so... This entire sequence, which will be most of this season, is a little discombobulated because of the action taking place in two different geographic locations.
Right, right.
Eventually figured out a better strategy, just wait a little longer, and then chapter is 100 pages long. And that'll be one episode.
Oh, dear.
I don't know.
Yeah, and it's made worse because it's not as visually interesting as the first season was. I almost didn't watch this week because of Bungo Stray Dogs being back on form. Then but I did have time because this didn't show up until today. Karakuri Circus episode 29, what Shirogane did.
Oh, was it late?
Yes, it was, but much like how when I post the podcasts, they backdated it to the day they were supposed to have put it out.
They're like, we totally fucking did.
So the entire episode is basically everybody who wasn't in the circus part of the arc being mad at Eleonore because they think she might be part of Faceless's plan.
Well, they're all reasonably certain that she, I mean, like, I think that's also true, that
it is true,
she's freaking Doll Francine's,
Doll Francine.
Yeah, Doll Francine has been, like, not downloaded, but absorbed into her with Aqua Vitae, right?
That is correct, yes.
Because that actually has happened, they're right. But it's like, A, that's not her fault, because she was a baby at the time, and B, it was Doll Francine who'd become good, but, you know...
Yeah, also, and she's also don't know that, the reincarnation of Francine.
Yes, she's the reincarnation of both versions of, actually, both versions of Francine, but not the fake Doll Francine.
That is correct, yes.
Oh my god, this show.
Masaru has not got back yet from, presumably he's still crying over Columbine's head.
Like, is he gonna fix her, or what's taking him so fucking long?
I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, I've got a vague idea. I mean, this episode spells out what's happening for the rest of the series. They've got a train, it's got a space shuttle on it, a steam train, they've got to take the steam train 10,000 miles down the Trans-Siberian Express
A steam train with a shuttle with Harry on it.
Yes, with Harry on it. And it's got to be guarded by the people on the circus, but maybe not by the end, because...
Yeah.
We learned by the end that Shirogane's been secretly giving everybody else in the building Aqua Vitae by bleeding into their water supply.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, it's presented as this thing where it's like, oh, what a noble thing. And I'm like, it looks super gross, though. And the way she does it, like, she doesn't even, like, slit her entire arm and leg, basically. Just super nasty. But, So the reason that, like, and I love the way the guys who were soldiers and recovering in the hospital, they're like, guys, hey, how come we can't go? Because we don't trust this one. She's like half a puppet herself.
They're kind of a problem because in the comic, they have a much bigger role. In the anime, this is the first time we fucking see them.
I was trying to think. I was like, oh, I hate you so much. And I was like, have you ever seen this motherfucker before? I don't know this guy.
Yeah, because otherwise there'd be nobody to complain about her except Ming Xia.
Yeah, and by the end of it, Ming Xia feels bad that she complained about her. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, come on, guys. Come on, it's your own blooming comic. Keep track of what you've cut out and what you've left in.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least, like, put in a character earlier on so that he'll make sense to be in a scene later on or something.
Having said that, there's something happens in this episode which happens in the comic without any prelude as well, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
Is that Faceless... Oh, by the way, I've cloned myself a new body. Why the fuck did you do that in the first place if that was possible?
What? He had a convoluted fan. He had a very good convoluted... Okay, I'm going to make her fall in love with this baby child, and then I'm going to be the baby child, and it's all going to fucking work out. And I was like, for one thing, right, he knows he can download himself with Aqua Vitae, so what's the deal with him using computers all of a sudden? For another thing, yeah, he could do this all the fucking time. He just cloned himself a younger version of himself. And he did this in space. He had access to this technology on the International Space Station or whatever the fuck that thing's called.
So he's now totally whichever one of the brothers he is.
And he says in the room, he's like, the reason I went through my big convoluted plan was to fuck with you specifically because you look like the brother that you're kind of a reincarnation of, sort of.
Yeah.
This alchemy, which is miraculous, as miraculous abilities as far as the powers of known science, is old hat. I'm going to put everything on computers now, much less efficiently.
I think it's like a Lex Luthor type situation where the guy's a genius and can do whatever he wants, but is so much of a petty bullshit asshole that he just fucks it over for himself and makes it far more complicated than it needs to be.
So yes, he's decided that, well, if you're not going to fall in love with me, I'm just going to kill everybody on Earth. So I've turned up the power on the Apollyons, the tiny puppets. Which...
I thought the Apollyons were the giant angels that spread the
microscopic puppets. Be it, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're both.
I think the angels might be made of tiny fucking things now that you mention it.
They could well be. And everyone on Earth who's got Zonifer will be dead in 2 weeks.
Which is everyone on Earth except for anyone in this hospital right now.
Yes.
Right?
That is correct. Everybody on Earth except the people in the hospital.
So technically everyone on Earth is fine. They're just all in static comas that they can't awake from like a waking nightmare. But they won't die. I mean, they will eventually die.
Yeah.
But not anytime soon. Basically.
And they can't... There's no way... Basically, LeFou's plan is you've got to go up into space and convince him... to undo it, because they can't undo it themselves.
Because they don't know how to undo it. And if we go up and just kill him, well, then just everyone on Earth will die anyway. So we need to convince him. We need to get the secret out of him somehow. So ask him nicely? I don't fucking know. We'll go to space. We'll go across to Siberia from fucking France.
That's the thing I did like, is that they've got... There's not like, oh, we beat him up and we've won. We've got to actually have, a debate with him and convince him.
Have a conversation. We got to do this crazy plan that might get us all fucking killed anyway. And the odds of us doing it are really low, but that's all we got, really.
Yeah, and we've got people who can't... they've got acrobats. We've got less circus people than there should be because they weren't in the anime. That's fine, because there's probably less puppets than...
The fact that they have to send two gymnasts and a ringmaster and a fucking lion tamer with no lion.
A knife thrower who's a deadly assassin.
And a knife thrower is a deadly assassin. That one's fine. I'm fine with her because at least it's skills to pay the bills. That's fine. But we have to send these people on this deadly mission because they've been breathing in her sweat for now. And everyone else in the hospital would probably fucking die not 5 minutes out of the hospital. Which is just so crazy. It's like, we got to depend on the circus characters. And it's like, well, that might feel a little better if we'd seen these characters in the show to this point. But right now it's just what, these fucking assholes from episode 4 or something? Whatever fucking episode they were
in. And these are the guys who are going to try and talk this guy back from the edge.
No, Narubi's going to do that.
Even then... Is he our champion debater? I don't know.
No, but the other thing that's really bugging me about the show is I'm kind of fucking I'm not annoyed at Narumi. I'm annoyed at the way he's been written, because he started off fun-loving martial arts guy, and I was like, oh, this guy's fucking aces. But now he's like, I'm deadly serious, and I'm not going to listen to your tragic backstory, Shirogane. I'm just going to fucking sulk and talk about how I'd fucking kill you, and I'd never say that I loved you, even as a joke, which was what you told me, but I don't have memories of that, because we're not explaining why I don't have memories of that. He's just an asshole. He turned from a fun-loving character into a real fucking piece of shit, well, and it's really bugging me.
He did see a lot of people die in front of him.
I know, but like...
And he's made out of most of their puppets.
Yeah, but it's like they've literally kind of taken the fun part of his humanity away from him. And I don't really root for
the character. Don't worry too much, because the character who's not in this episode is who the actual focus of the ending is.
Okay.
This late in the game, still put on this shit.
No, well, it's Masaru's story. It's not anybody else's story.
Oh, okay.
It's not, Narumi's not like a... Narumi's like a third character at this stage, despite like,
yes,
you know,
he
being
is
in
now,
the opening
yes,
and shit.
The story's shifted back to Eleonore and definitely Masaru. Which again,
yeah, like,
well, that's why you wanted the circus thing in there longer, but I guess they didn't get enough episodes, which was the most likely story, or they were worried that they'd lose viewers on an extended sequence which was all in the circus.
Like, I feel like the original comic, even if it goes on very convolutedly and on far too long and on way too many tangents, it's still probably better than this, just because it has all the fucking constituent parts.
Yes.
This is like, it's so chopped and changed.
Is another one of the bad episodes, because of the presence of the soldiers for a start is the big thing. I mean, at least we've met the circus people before at one point. Whereas these people are like, why are you?
I always hated you for reasons, and I was like, who the fuck are you, blonde guy? I don't never fucking see you.
Yeah, they say they're soldiers, which makes it worse, because if it was just like the medical staff.
Yeah, because most of the thing is just patients and doctors in the hospital. Yeah.
But,
like, where were you guys when we could have used some soldiers? It's like, our part was written out of the show.
Yes, they were defending the hospital. That's where they get picked up in the comic.
I think you'll find in the show the only people defending the hospital were the fucking puppet guy who's hanging out with the knife thrower, who she feels at ease with because they're both deadly assassins.
That's correct, yes.
So weird.
And Guy, who seems to have recovered mightily from whatever beating I thought was almost killed him last time I saw him.
I thought he was dead. What?
I'm sure it'd be better once Masaru is back. I think generally it's whenever Masaru is the center of attention.
He's like a Masaru supporting character.
The show is much better. Anyway, on to Wacky Nana, second season, episode 5, Cunning. Trap set by the Bakufu. In which the entire episode is them arguing whether or not they should let the actor help them because he's got the book which tells you where all the traps are set. But if they get him to help, they'll have to pay him.
They're on minimal budget.
Yes. And it is basically just that conversation until they fall in a pit.
Like, I love the boss call him up on the phone and is like, yeah, the boss says there are traps, but we still can't afford him. Don't worry, I'll use my razor sharp senses, and like wanders immediately into a trap. I was like, should we go back now? They can hear the wheels turning and cogs moving or something. This is like,
Should we fall down a hole? And then they fall down a hole and then immediately cut to credits. That cut is so well timed.
Like, I knew that was going to fall down a trap hole, and then one of the characters says, we're literally going to fall down a trap hole, and then they do. And I was like, fucking perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It was very short, but it's effective. Then we got Sarazanam Zanmai, episode 5, I Want to Connect, But I Can't Be Forgiven, in which the heist of the century is pulled off, or isn't. So, the plan to kidnap Sara, which was discussed in the last episode, is half carried out here. The problem is, it turns out she's a Kappa as well.
Yeah, did you not see like her little fucking show thing where she literally has a Kappa right there beside her?
Yes, I did not realize that was actually her.
Yeah, I thought she just had access
to it. It has her little bow. A little bow on her hair and a ponytail.
Well, it could just be a wig. We have seen one of the main characters dress as her in the exact same wig, so.
Yeah. Well, I think as well that, sure, episode one, the little ticker tape at the bottom of her thing says, "I'm looking for a Kappa Prince." It's like, oh, she's got a princess.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Saved that nugget.
Also, we learn a lot about Kazuki, isn't it? The
He's. I was trying to figure out what was happening there. Like, was he adopted or what was happening there?
He was adopted.
That's the question. Yes, is but who?
Oh no!
At
the very least, he thinks he's adopted. Yes. And his younger brother is his foster parents' actual child because he meets his younger brother in the hospital. That kind of way.
Yeah, but
I think that's the case.
But why does the grandfather tell him that his mother was a sloppy woman? So
yeah, that was weird. Yeah,
and there's this whole thing where this mysterious lady just happens to just like descend the steps right in front of him and just embrace him as in, "You are my son." It's like, and then they talk for a while, and then that's definitely him being an unreliable narrator again.
Yeah, yeah. It's either that or like that his dad messed around or something like that. He's dad's son or something like that.
Or is he the grandfather's son?
Yeah, yeah, could be that as well. It's kind of thing of like raised as a son by your own sister kind of thing because of weird shenanigans. Yeah, it could be something like that.
Oh, I forgot like Jack Nicholson got.
Oh, did that happen to him?
It was like he was raised alongside his quote-unquote sister and by his quote-unquote mother, but his sister was his mother and his mother was his grandmother.
Yeah, there's some of that in my family tree as well, my mother discovered. At least looks like it.
Because of people just being like ashamed of various fucking
things.
Yeah,
there's like ages which don't match up unless certain people aren't actually the parent. So, not entirely sure what was good, but it gives you a bit more sympathy. And then we learn that he's the one who caused the, his brother, Hakara, not to be able to walk because...
I did like the signs of that earlier because you see, like, the kid brother on top of I think it's like a slide or something in a playground. And I was like, wait, did he carry his brother up there? But then later you see his brother running and you're like, oh, okay, that's not actually...
He wasn't born that way. Well, we saw he wasn't.
But it feels like he's mad at them for not being mad at him.
Yeah. That's what it feels like. He wants to be like...
Self-hatred,
for this. Yeah. He wants to be like the one-on-one in this fucking experiment. But it's like... And that's just like making him even more miserable because, it's like your family will forgive you. And that was clearly an accident. Maybe you should have been minding your little brother a little better, but, you know, still...
You were in stress, basically his little brother wanted to follow him around, and he was like, no, I'm going to see my real mom, but he can't tell that to his little brother without breaking his heart. So he kind of, is mean to him in the hopes that he'll go leave him alone, but he crosses the road when he shouldn't have, and he gets hit by a car. Now, he did a mean thing out of trying to protect someone else's feelings, and that person got physically fucking hurt from it. And everyone forgives him because it's a fucking mistake. Because you didn't intend for your kid brother to get hit by a car. It wasn't his fault. But he's mad at his brother and I think his family at large, and it's separating him even more.
He wants to connect, but he can't be forgiven. And so, as he admits, by the end of the episode, is that this ruse to dress up as Sarah. And
well, it's for his benefit.
Is for his benefit. It's him to connect to his little brother in a way that he feels he can't do honestly as himself.
Yeah. It's as well that he thinks, well, like a regular family would, they get mad at him and things like that, don't they forgive me? But his family, they forgive him and got mad at him. But as a result, I'm adopted, so these aren't really my real family, so they're probably just faking forgiving me, so maybe they don't actually forgive me at all. And he's just going around and struggling in his head like that.
It's kind of stuck in a loop of self-loathing logic.
But why does his little brother have a sachet of scent which smells like the woman who he thinks is his real mother?
Because that's
not answered this episode because they don't get the sachet back because they failed to beat the Kappa zombie.
Which means they're stuck as Kappas.
Yes.
We've messed with the format.
I know, it's great. We should, while this all sounds very heavy, there is a load of comedy in this, particularly the bit where he's trying to chain up Sarah, lock her up, and she just keeps on squeezing out from every single hole.
It's like a fucking, like, Looney Tunes cartoon. It's just not him in the chest and throw him in the bottom of the ocean. That fucking, like, Roadrunner or Eugene the Jeep is just right behind me all the time.
I did like the setup in the thing as well, where his friend is giving hand signals to say his little brother hasn't figured out that you're in drag right now. And when the producer breaks out of the fucking bathroom stall, he was tied up and gagged in. But he's there with no pants, and his friend just jumps in and is like, get away from her, you pervert! You know, it's just like, there's a sequence of comedy
events. You get away from
her,
you pervert!
I know, it's funny coming from him. But, yeah, there's a lot of, like, comedy shenanigans happening amongst the extreme drama of it all, yeah. Also, we get more of the cops. And I still don't know what the fuck they're dealing with.
No, because there seems to be like some sort of schism between their relationship. Like, one of them's more emotional than the other one.
And the guy who, like, opens up his fucking heart as part of the dance ceremony, he's kind of like, well, I'm fucking giving up a lot more out of this than you, bud.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess he's like, or something like, well, he's walking distant now, because, again, you can kind of, like, pass a lot of things from the opening sequences. We have a little thing where they're all doing a pose, and they're kind of skidding down the thing. So we have, okay, we got Kazuki, he wants to, like, connect with his brother. We got Anthony, he wants to connect with Kazuki, and then it's showing the person they might connect with. And then we get to the grey-haired cop, and he wants to connect with his partner, but we're wearing the glasses. So there's something, he wants to reach out to him as well. And
yeah, there's definitely indicators towards that. Mm.
And have this thing that's, you know, oh, this, by doing this thing where we're killing guys, attracting the desire, maybe I can form the connection with them there, but it seems to be, if anything, pushing him further away, even though they work side by side, I don't know.
Yeah, something like he's trying to make the connection when he himself can't make the connection.
It's still in riddles, because he's going out for maintenance, which apparently involves chasing pleasure. And it's his lifeline, so I guess pulling his heart out each time they do that. Does he have to, like, go and
get a new one?
Get some new desires to repower himself? I don't know.
Like, every time they do that, they're pulling out his literal own feelings by pulling out his figurative own feelings by pulling out his literal heart. Yeah. So he has to, like, re-up his humanity each time or something?
Yeah, maybe it's like if you've got to do something to recharge your libido. Like, your libido can wane as you get older, or as you get kind of, maybe these guys have been partners too long, they're just so settled down now that the spark is gone, the fire is dying down. You gotta go out and kill some people exclusively to try.
So they raised the Kappa Child together based off the comic, and that Kappa Child is now a popular fortune teller on TV. And they got empty nest syndrome or something? I'm not exactly sure what the fuck is going on.
We thought the child would bring us, like, closer together, but now he took us further apart.
It's like
the glasses guy was one of those pushy stage parents.
Who fucking knows? There's still too much we don't know about him, I guess.
But by the end of the episode, you're basically, the regular structure you've had for the first four episodes has now been thrown into chaos.
Mm.
As our heroes are still stuck as Kappas, and our quote-unquote villains are no longer, like, do not appear to be the unified front, even in victory, that they've seemed to be in the previous four episodes.
Yeah.
Obviously, I there must be something personal to Ikuhara. I know he's talked about, like, his dad dying away on a business trip recently, but the idea of, like, families who aren't as related as they appear at the start of a series... That is also that's definitely the thing in Penguin Drum. Is that a thing in the Bear one as well?
Yukumarashi, kind of like from what I finished the whole thing. Well, I kind of commentaries surrounding it. It's just like kind of like I guess the kind of bonds of sisterhood is maybe a kind of a thing because that program understands about like fuck the patriarchy. Fuck the patriarchy and all the kind of the rules and processes you've been to, and how we can be, I guess, stronger together and rise up against it. Again, I haven't seen the whole thing, but don't quote me on that.
Still, more than I've seen, which is one episode.
Yeah, but I'm interested to kind of see if they have this whole Kazuki mini arc, or if they continue on with it. What to say about that? Because speaking as somebody who is an adoptive child, I'm always interested in kind of stories that's around that. You know, but I understand where I came from. Well, I understand who raised me. I'm still not sure where I came from, so I should have you say. But I'm always interested.
I feel like you're like, it's less important for you.
It's still something that I think of. And
fair enough.
I'm always interested in stories that deal with that. As I say, like Kazuki's experience is much more different to mine. It's just I think of it as, well, these are people like who, you know, they didn't like give birth to me, but they still had enough love in their hearts to take me and take care of me. And I see it's kind of the polar opposite of what he does. He sees all this, like, if he's not my real family, these aren't like real connections I have with them. So anything they're saying or doing and all the love they're giving is somehow not real or false. So
I was put on or something. Yeah.
So I want to see where this goes in a personal stake.
Then we've got Fruit Basket Episode 6, Perhaps We Should Invite Ourselves Over.
Or Toru's friends, Hannah and Uo, they get like a little bit leery of like Toru hanging out with these Soma boys. You know, they're something like a little off about them. So they kind of get, let's go over to your house. We're going to see you got up in some new digs. And when I see you getting on, you can't live in that tent anymore. And then they're like in panic stations because it's like, oh crap, there are people coming over, don't know the secret. Everybody act normal. Like, the boss is coming over for dinner and nothing can go wrong. And literally, like, Hannah and Uo just sat down at the table while Toro's out of the room. I'll get some snacks for everybody. And, okay. What are your intentions for our daughter? Let me go under your roof.
Like, it's that to the point that by the end of it where they're like, hey, you guys are okay. You get her and you appreciate her and you're good to her. So we're okay with you being together. And they're both kind of like embarrassed. It's like, this sounds like kind of like parents that have accepted a marriage proposal.
Yeah.
This is weird. We're uncomfortable with this situation.
Like, they understand that, like, you know, Toru is really, really giving up herself, perhaps, like, to her detriment. And they feel kind of crap because, oh, she keeps giving, and we feel like we can't give, like reciprocate that. And
they also feel bad that she went to these people who they consider strangers rather than to her best friends when she was stuck without a house and that kind of thing.
But they have their own home life stuff going on as well. And so Toru probably didn't want to intrude on that, but Pichai didn't want to intrude on anyway because, you know, I don't want to be a bother to anybody, even though you're fucking living in a tent and there are people out here who will gladly take you in. You don't need to be like thinking of yourself as an inconvenience to us. We'll put you up for a while. Like, don't worry about it.
Like you said, making it harder for herself than it needs to be, and putting everything on her back rather than for other people's sake, rather than anyone else sticking up for her. And the guys mention that much to her friends, and their friends are like, yeah, you're right, you do actually understand her on like a deeper level, because you get that she will put herself in harm's way for other people, so they won't let her do that. So they're okay with these two cute boys and Toru living with them.
There's other characters from the Soma family who just barge in on the school festival. First we have Momiji, who Toru encountered briefly in the lobby of the office she cleans after school, who was just like the young foreign German child. But it's Momiji, he's half Japanese, half German. He's so cute and adorable. I'm so much a precocious young boy. Ho ho! Even though I think he's only like a class or two below wherever these guys are in high school.
Also, he speaks flawless German. Not one fucking problem there.
Yeah. It's being rambunctious. It's like, oh, I don't care about the thing. I want to hug everybody. I'm going to hug you, Toru. No, don't do that, you idiot. And turn into a rabbit, like, thankfully behind the screen so that no one saw. I was like, oh, gosh, this guy's going to be a handful.
I did like distraction from that. It's like, hey, what's the do with that rabbit? Where'd that kid go? Why are his clothes on the ground now? And he's currently dressed in a dress.
Yuki is like, for the further step for Screw Festival, it's like, oh, will it be a kind of a thing if we had a bit of like cosplay or crossplay going on there? And what if we got Yuki to do it? And what if only us like third year girls who will be leaving school at the end of the year and we want to see us before we leave in case we miss it forever? What if we all like pressurize him into doing it? So he's wearing a dress. But he goes like, oh, kind of acts all cute. Oh, no, please don't make us, you know, I think I'll go away now. Phone say, no, don't go!
Yeah, and it's weird. All, like, the boys and all the girls are, like, really into this fucking performance. So it's a good distraction. It works pretty good. But
I'll take the stress off. This doesn't suit me. If I say, no, you're perfect the way you are. Don't take it off, please.
You look great, honey. but yeah, we get introduced to the little rabbit kid. And then we get introduced to, I've forgotten the guy's name, the creepy doctor.
Hattori. Hattori. Very taciturn doctor figure. I guess he's kind of Momiji's minder for to bring him in. There's some good guys though. When Rumpy's like getting a photo of like Kyo and Yuki at school and Yuki in a dress normally, it's just like, finish this sentence. What was it now? Macaroni and cheese, and then, gotcha, camera. Got me smiling.
Yeah. He'd have to get a happy picture of them together, and they're both bullying that they're standing beside each other smiling for the photo.
But Yuki says to, mind yourself around Hattori, because remember I was saying before about people discovered the Soma secrets, they get like hypnotized into recent memories. That's the guy who does it. So don't
go anywhere alone with this guy. And at the end of the episode, she gets a call from him, meet me alone at this location.
By the way, Akito, the head of the household, may want to see you. And there's some lines dropped there about how they were saying about Toru. Oh, Toru's the kind of girl, you know, she wouldn't ask for the moon, wouldn't ask for anything at all. And then Akito and then has a little clandestine meeting with Shigure after he leaves the house, and it's like, oh yes, I want to like have all all the family again, end up all together again, don't you? And yes, I would be the kind of person who asked the moon, haven't I? So Akito's kind of set up to be the diametric opposite to Toru then, for this person who's constantly taking rather than giving of themselves. Villainous. We'll find out more about that down the line.
Oh, it turns out the dog is a novelist as well.
Oh yeah. That's quite a detail that wasn't mentioned, but I just knew inherently from reading the comic.
No, I'd kind of forgotten until when it's like, and Toru was even like, you're a novelist? Holy shit. That's cool. And he writes, like, I guess like pulpy kind of love novels and serious works.
Yeah. So she shows me your book. Here's one. Oh, that's a book. A silly romance book. I just wrote for the yucks. It's for laughs.
Those are the money makers, I'll bet.
Yeah. Novelists, you say.
And dogs.
And dogs, yes. Bug Go Stray Dogs, season 3, episode 30. Slap the Stick and Addict. As we catch up all the chapters we skipped over to get to Dostoevsky. There. Someone else say it. I'm too tired now. The pills.
Dostoevsky.
Last week. So, the first half, there's another group have appeared. And they attack the... Is it the coffee house owner?
It's the cafe underneath the wardrobe. Armstead offices is, where they all love hanging out, and Atsushi is there, lads, come on, we gotta get some cases, but saying, no, don't need to, we love hanging out in the cafe, it's great, and then or the guy who runs the cafe, oh, he's so good, even his hands have been making coffee for so long, it smells like coffee.
He can't wash the smell off, so, he makes so much coffee.
So the rest of the agency don't give a crap, they don't care, oh, sure, we're grand, sir. We took care of the guild last season, there's no one left out, and the port mafia have been quiet, there's no need to be going out there and doing things until these upstarts coming in, trying to fill the power vacuum left behind by the guilds, and they fucking just ransack the cafe. And then they open up this whole thing, yes, we're all, what's up, we got like 50 bajillion guys armed with guns, and we're in this hidden bunker, and no one's gonna break in, and then...
And also we keep changing bunkers every fucking day, so no one's gonna fucking catch us.
We got a whole system in place, and...
Who could possibly beat us, but people with essentially magic powers?
Kenji Miyazawa pushes down the vault door, and then they fuck the guys up. You can try and, like, crash a space whale into the city, but they might be able to get over. If you fuck around with that cafe where they hang out every day, you're going in for some trouble.
That's where they skive off, man. Come on, you can't take that from them.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, but they were trying to find out about the armed detective agency's properties, which they're surprised about because they don't have any. And then we see that this was all a plot of Dostoevsky to get the armed detective agency to show him what their powers are.
Which they kind of all do. It's like, yeah, your man busts down the bank door. They say that Rambo figured it out in 5 seconds as to where you guys were hiding. You know, it's just like, yeah, he gets him a good steal of what everyone do. Oh, your man's illusion powers as well, because he hides the,
you know,
the video camera kind of shit. Yeah.
And your son always like, oh, we're going to have to heal you up after I chop you up a little bit more.
Yeah, he gets everyone to reveal their shit. So it works out well for him.
But it's also a handy reminder if you'd forgotten what everybody did.
Yeah, a quick little rundown, I suppose.
Yeah. And Doppo is there as well, I guess, doing all the paperwork while these guys are slacking off.
I did like the aura paperwork. That was pretty great.
Then the final reveal is they're like discussing like some of the guild who they haven't rounded up.
And oh, because, yeah, the Art Tiger Boy saw her wandering around town, up to some tricks, maybe.
Yeah, so, Lucy Maud Montgomery, but yes. who we know, that turns face, so she's okay, but she's got a strange, box she's carrying around. What's inside it? We don't know.
But she's now working at the cafe.
Yeah.
I assume it was just, like, the tills or something. She was just bringing it to the bank or something like that.
Maybe it was something as innocent as that.
Yeah.
And they were backing up the wrong tree altogether.
And then in Addict, we meet Katai Tiyama, who bears a striking resemblance to the protagonist of Tatami Galaxy. Which then I looked up who he's based on, and I was like, oh, I see that Tatami Galaxy was perhaps like a parody of the writing style of Katai Tayama.
Okay.
Hence,
it all comes back.
Yes, hence the great design that he's got here. Yes, so he used to work for the Armed Detective Agency. They're going to see him because they wanted to find the origin of this chip they found in Moby Dick that caused it.
Yeah, whoever tried to hack into Moby Dick at the end of the last one and crash it.
And this is where I think this really helps when they've rearranged the episodes, is because now we, the viewer, know what that symbol means already, and so we already know who did it. And that he will do, but in return, they've got to deliver a love letter to this woman that he's fallen in love with, Miris Glantz, which made him forget his true love, that of his own futon.
You see, with them doing the plot and the plot that we already know the answer to the mystery and that kind of thing, I was like, yeah, this is great. And then the episode became about bullshit, and I was like, oh, I'm all on fucking board now. Yes.
Because this woman is seen hanging around with
Akutagawa.
Yes, by what's the other the woman's name?
Oh yeah,
Higuchi.
Yes.
Because she's initially thinking, it's like, oh, I'm going to pick up the boss and it's going to look so fucking cool and he'll invite me in for coffee and maybe, I don't know, we'll fuck it. And then he's talking to a hot lady and he's like, who the fuck is this hot lady? She's stalking the wherever this lady might hang out. And then she sees the armed detective agency is looking for this woman as well. So she inadvertently kind of joins forces with them.
Yes.
Because they're both aware that they're on a ceasefire, but it's like, okay, we both want to find this woman for different reasons, so let's work together.
Well, kind of the same reason, because she's like, well, if this woman falls in love with this secret suitor, then she'll no longer be interested in the person I'm interested in.
Well, she thinks it's the were-tiger, and she's kind of like, good on you.
Well, briefly, and then he turns up with his futon being worn as a cape.
Not the best look, no.
Yeah, well, his power only works when he feels safely ensconced in his futon.
Yeah. Yes, so his power is that he can control machines that he can see without having to
Wasn't that a video game? Watch Dogs or something. Yeah.
I was thinking more like that the one guy in Mobsucker 100 who controlled all the tellies and stuff.
It's probably because he used it to change the traffic lights, which I think is a thing in that game. Yeah.
Anyway, the punchline is that this woman is his sister, and it is also a character we've already seen.
Gin. Gin. It's Knife Lady.
Yes.
Remember Knife Lady?
Normally wrapped up, so we can't see.
I did even like them, like when they chased her into, it's like, oh, good, that alley's a dead end. We'll have her caught now, and that kind of thing. And she's just trying to change costumes so they won't realize, kind of thing. But she's caught partway through. It's pretty funny.
And delivered the love letter. And we learned
he got knocked down, yes. But he knew he was going to get knocked down, because why the fuck would she go out with this guy?
Yes. But he knew that he wouldn't be able to focus on determining the origin of the chip if he was still wondering about this mystery woman.
Yeah. Mm. Also, he's former Arab detective. She's port mafia. From two different worlds. It'll never work.
But then the great thing after the credits, the briefest of 10-second gag, where Higuchi's trying to get Gin to call her big sister.
Yeah, because she's so delighted that A, this is no romantic rival, and B, this is cute as shit. So let's double up on this.
I'm a superior, so you have to call.
You have to. You have to say it, so I can know what it sounds like when I finally get together with your brother.
Oh God.
Excellent, and another two-parter, or another two-story episode next week.
Hmm.
Mm. Yeah, bring it on. This is the mainline stuff. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And I like that the first story is really short, and then you get the break, and then the longer. I was like, they didn't have to like force the story into being equal lengths to fill up the episode. They just shifted the advertising break a little earlier.
Also, some assholes we've never seen with no fucking build-up goes like, yes, we've totally defeated the armed detective agency with all our clever plans and many guys and things. And it's just like, you guys are fucked. You guys are super fucked.
Yeah, that's what all the criminals, they said, would be able to rush to them. And they're like, what are you doing picking a fight with them?
Yeah.
You crazy? They got superpowers.
You want to die? God, I'm out of here.
They're called something like The Park, weren't they? It got their own secret. Yeah.
Who cares?
Yes, we'll never see them again.
Dead.
Then, did you watch Demon Slayer?
Not for a while now, no.
Okay, well, we'll remove that. Star Twinkle, pretty cool. You didn't watch that. I didn't watch Real Soga. So we get nicely to Gege Ge no Kitaro, episode 55, Hee-Hee's Harassment Hell. So Hee-Hee is one of those yokai which is clearly just an animal. He has the same name as the animal that he is.
It's a really big animal.
And he keeps hanging around with monkeys for no particular reason.
I always just like to imagine, like, how did it come to be that somebody somewhere managed to convince another bunch of people that this animal was some form of yokai?
I've seen a monkey. Yeah, we know what those, they're called monkeys. It's like, no, like a fucking big crazy monkey. That we call those a big monkey that is crazy. Yeah.
Like crazy laugh, what, like hee hee hee, hee hee hee.
That's the noise a monkey like makes. That. Yeah. We know what those are.
Wait a minute. That's pretty weird. Okay. Could be a yokai then.
So he's decided that, it's time to bring Japan back to tennis greatness once more. So
was there a plot where he did this before? Is this a callback to an old episode?
No,
or
it's a callback to, first of all, aim for the ace.
Yes.
And then whoever it was that I stuck in the notes in the...
Kimiko Date.
Yes.
Mm, okay.
And this is presumably... what's her name? Naomi...
Oh, Naomi Osaka.
That's it, yes. Presumably that is what's inspired this episode.
I feel like it's also like a callback, maybe some of the writers going like, you know, things were better in the old days where you could, you know, where men were men and women did what they were told.
Oh, or perhaps the writer hearing that from her dad. Who was writing the episode.
It's definitely like, you know, this guy isn't in the right saying this.
He was writing the episode, I think, of Kamen Rider Zio, which was opposite this. Because she tweeted about how she can't support her father today because they're up against each other.
Oh, dear.
But no, I think the story, the message, which is really, I like the way the message at the end is relayed by, Kitaro's dad, but then he goes, well, I'm just reinforcing the stereotypes of old people now.
This is exactly the kind of speech young people wouldn't listen to.
Yeah, basically they say you've got to, like, you have to move with the times or shut your face. Is essentially the message.
Good message, yeah.
Like, you can't train somebody like you would in the 70s sports anime with the brutal regimes and all like that.
I would go as far as just, I wouldn't go as far as isolating it to anime.
Yeah, probably reality. It's very much
more
reality.
Likely reality.
Yeah,
well, we know for a fact this has happened in sport.
Yes, sumo particularly, because there was the big scandal about 10 years ago.
I know the press circuit is like ugly as shit and motherfuckers like Natsumi Otoko fucking profit from it, but it's still better than what we had.
I'd like to touch with Natsumi Otoko here. Didn't feature directly. He was just like a guy in the shadows, and when some latest scandal is erupted, he's just one in the shadows. Oh my god, man, counting the what abilities he's got, and he just slinks that away.
He wasn't bullshitting either. He wasn't like, oh, this guy totally did some sexual harassment. He's like, that guy's a yokai. And it basically got paid for it. And I was like, you didn't fucking lie. And apparently that is a crime. So,
Koshi, is it true you're afraid of yokai? If you're doing yokai harassment? No. It's not a lie.
I'm clearly not a monkey in sunglasses.
My name is John Heehee. My parents are Al and Patricia and Herb Heehee from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
This was the closest it's felt like a yokai watch episode, I have to say.
Yeah, that's true.
Because once they get rid of him as the coach, then he's replaced with another yokai, our otter friend, from an earlier episode, because the tennis player he was coaching had seen him catch a fish and thought it was a great... Because her complaint was, she was all for him being the trainer, but then she got eliminated in, like, the very first round because his, filling you up with fire was of absolutely no use in modern tennis where the people actually have techniques.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. Like he was training her to have spirit and heart, and he was training her, like, I guess endurance and that kind of shit, but she's like, teach me a fucking swing or something, you know?
Yes.
This guy had a perfect backswing with his fishing rod,
yes,
I guess.
Which was a parody of, that tablet's gone too far to remember it, that fishing manga.
Sanpei, something?
That's it, yes. Fisherman Sanpei.
Yeah.
Which I've watched one episode, it's pretty good. You can definitely see influence on One Piece, not just in the hat, but like some of the movement and figures. Does he just get bored?
I think he gets fired because he has his final press conference where he goes ape, and Kitaro shows up. To defeat him, he's actually remarkably easy to defeat.
It's just a monkey. Come on.
he's just like, give me one last request. Just tell her to win it for her. You know, tell your man to take care of my star pupil. And then your man's like, no, I got fucking fired, dude. She found a new yokai to teach.
Yeah,
her
new trainer.
Oh, that's it. Yes. Oh, that's
good. Like, what the Nuri Kabe? It's like, yes, he taught her how to complete defensive wall in tennis. Much like he is, in fact. She won the gold.
And catch it, kind of going like, he's literally a fucking wall. How is nobody seeing?
Well, he's wearing a suit.
He's wearing a suit and cool shades.
It worked for Hee-Hee, so I can't deny it. Yeah.
I'm glad that tablet kicked in, so I got to enjoy that punchline again with you describing it. but he's not giving up. He's trading monkeys. Once more, by the end
back
of
to training and monkeys, just doing it seriously this time.
It's the vampire musician story next week.
Yes,
he's like a mop top Beatles type guy in the original comic. So I'm curious as to what they'll update into in this one.
This is one of the nice looking episodes too. There's lots of
nice
character image for the gags.
Yeah. They lead into Dragon Ball when he grows to his enormous size.
Oh, for fucking sure. I mean, like, the fact that he's super kind of mullet hair just goes straight up as well. They're just like, come on, guys. You could have just done the fucking giant ape thing, but you went full Super Saiyan on it. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's good. I could have sworn I heard Jay Kibera, who was the narrator of Mr. Tonegawa, when we were going through the whole thing. Karaoke harassment.
Gourmet
harassment.
Yeah. I mean, the only one I'd be upset about is the noodle harassment there. I was just like, I get slurp your noodles, but there's no reason to do it obnoxiously.
Obahara. Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's so to do that voice. Wasn't him. I don't see him credited on this episode, but it was someone to be. Is it either him or someone doing a very good impression of him?
Channeling him, yeah.
Yeah.
Righty ho. I'm about to fall asleep, so we better end this episode. Anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
If things line up, and if you're, well, conscious for it, if you give it free time for it, you might be able to finally pull through with the, cartoon comparison format yet to be named with a torturous pun. I was racking my brains up for it today, but I was too tired. In which we have finally settled on what bits of which we're going to look at. And we'll be looking at an episode of Phil Silvers, as mentioned, and of course it's a Top Cat, which was it was inspired by Phil Silvers. And we've put it to Brian, and he's given the choices, the episodes. So we've, two ones that can both involve the gang meeting a rich heir, and how did both of these things, which have common emphasis and common kind of
structure and everything,
structure and things, how does one work in live action, how does one work in animation, and what is gained or lost in between? For the record, Brian could have given you episodes that both involved a chimpanzee, so that's on him.
I know you got to worry about the chimpanzee in the live action one. That's just... I'm not sure the chimp's in the live action one all that much. There's a chimp getting a court martial as well, I believe.
Yeah, come on.
That sounds pretty rad, dude. I'm just saying.
I mean,
but the court martial might not be the entire focus. I think it's more the fallout from that as well.
Yeah, maybe it would have been that one. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch them and I'll change my mind.
Do them both. I don't know. Just do it later, like 1 year later, just try it again, see if it's changed.
Okay. Currently on Dynamite of the Brain, you can find our review of Detective Pikachu, and then load a longer bit where we talk about spoilers. And even though we've said we're talking about spoilers, I still managed to upset Anthony by talking about spoilers, as if I've gone further than is even allowed within talking about spoilers.
Oh, okay. If you're talking about the movie, you're going to spoil parts of the movie, though, right?
Oh, yeah. But
that's kind of inherent to it.
Yes, I know. But we're talking about spoilers. And even then, he was like, oh, you said it. I was like, we're talking about spoilers.
If you've dropped a spoiler warning, you can basically spoil the entire thing. You can fucking spoil the post-credit sequence and everything, all that.
I didn't realize Internal Affairs was setting the Pikachu from the beginning to take the fall.
anyway, you've listened to that, and I may spoil your enjoyment of it before you've watched it. And then next week we'll be back with the anime that didn't make us, where we'll be talking about Chicken Takun, Jushin Liger, and Tokyo Pig.
Great name.
Sounds like exotic menu. Get some chicken, get some Tokyo pig.
Well, that's the mistake I made. Chicken is actually an alien duck. He's not a chicken.
Ooh, yum. And whatever meat Jushin Liger is. Delicious is what it is.
Biomechanical meat.
You don't know white meat.
Otherwise, we'll be back here next week with more Let's Go JoJo. Goodbye.
Oi. Wiedersehen.